time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hey there, and thank you for pressing the rewind button with us tonight. I'm Daljeet Khalsi, filmmaker and nostalgia nerd, and I'm joined by my good buddy Dan Fowler. He is the creative mind behind and the voice of Dead West, the web's first animated horror host over at ScreamingSoup.com. Dan, thanks for hitting the rewind button with me tonight.
Well, thanks for having me here, Dal. I'm happy to be here and talk about all the things we were nostalgic for back in our childhoods, I guess.
Childhood, teenage years, yesterday, today, this afternoon, whenever. We're going to leave the drama, the politics, all the BS of the modern day behind, hit the rewind button, and just revisit some of the things we love, like you said, with some detours along the way, of course. And I do have a little detour for you, Dan. I know you are a huge Oreo cookie fan. So have you heard of the newest Oreo cookie, the Post Malone Oreo?
No, so this, I have not. So this is supposed to taste like Post Malone?
You know, I was concerned about that because, you know, I thought it might taste like tattoo ink and stale cigarette smoke. I did sneak a little taste before tonight. I was pleasantly surprised. So the flavor is actually supposed to be salted caramel and shortbread cookie, which are two things which I enjoy. So,
okay, and you want to talk a little bit about the design on here? So it's not just the flavor. It's also that they made the design, they put his, well, on mine, it has his name on the back. It just says Post and looks like chains circling his name Post on the cookie. Is that the same as yours?
I got, it looks like a pickup truck inside a little swirly design.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting. And they call the inside the Post Swirl.
So let me ask you, if they made a cookie of you, what part of your life story would be told on the cookie? Because apparently Post Malone is about pickup trucks
and chains.
And chains?
That is a good question. Mine would probably have like a video camera on one side and maybe a pin on one, a writing instrument.
A writing pin, writing instrument. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
How about you?
Mine would probably just be a TV, something scary like a ghost.
Jack-o'-lantern. Yeah.
Jack-o'-lantern would
be
a good
one.
Yeah, that fit me pretty well. That
could go on both of our boxes, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you want to give it a try?
Yeah, let's go in.
All right.
Not the biggest salted caramel fan, but that's not bad. That's a lot better than some other of their forays into new flavors that they played around with that I enjoy.
We will one day have to talk about our favorite and least favorite Oreo cookies. That could be a show down the line. But the reason I wanted to get together tonight is I recently picked up a copy of the novelization of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1990.
So that's not your original copy?
This is the first copy I've ever had.
You've had that since childhood?
No. But I have had this one since childhood. This is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the storybook based on the movie. And this novelization is a whopper of a book. It's a whole 92 pages. And I think it's about the same as the storybook I had ever since I was 4 years old. So
it looks like you did a lot of writing on that since you were four.
I drew on it. Remember carbon paper when you could trace? Apparently I did that in here too. And I had the paper facing the wrong way. And so instead of going on the piece of paper below it, it went on the back page. So this has been fun to page through recently. But it just got me thinking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and how big of a movie that was for me. I know it's a movie you enjoy too. For me, it's one of those movies that I loved as a kid and I still enjoy sitting and watching it today. How did that movie affect your fandom?
It did not.
It did not?
It did not. I was not a fan of this movie growing up.
Really?
I was a fan of Ninja Turtles growing up. Don't get me wrong. I had the toys and I had, you know, maybe some pajamas and I was certainly watching the cartoon. And if anybody threw a Turtles comic book at me, whether that be from Archie Comics or Mirage, I was definitely digging it. But this particular movie, it just didn't really do it for me. Like, I vaguely do remember seeing it in the theater in 1990. Just enough to say I remember seeing it. That's about it. I am more a fan of the second movie.
I'm a big fan of the second movie also. The first movie, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1990, is one of the first movies I vividly remember seeing in the movie theater. My big sister Michelle took me there, and I remember watching it with her and just loving it. And then a couple of weeks or months later, saw it on the shelves at Walmart when I was there with my mom one evening and had to have it. And of course, she picked it up for me. Had to go home and immediately watch the VHS, which I think is still at my parents' house somewhere. And my mom worked at Kmart at the time, so she had access to, was able to grab one of those cardboard stand-ups, full-size cardboard stand-ups.
No.
That.
What did that look like?
So it was the Raphael.
Is that like a head-to-toe Raphael?
Head-to-toe Raphael. He's about 5 feet tall. I wish I would have kept that thing. Later in, you know, my teenage years, when you allow some of the other folks you hang out with to influence your decision making, I was like, I don't like this anymore. I'm over Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and now, you know, almost 40-year-old me goes, "You idiot! What was wrong with you?"
Yeah, I couldn't have thrown that away. No matter how influenced I was by the wrong crowd, I'm still holding on to a Angelina Jolie from Tomb Raider 2 cardboard stand up since. I got that in college or high school, but I still have it. I did hit a point where it's like, I'm married, I don't really need this anymore, and but I couldn't give it away. I don't want to just throw it away. I don't want to just give it to a Goodwill, but I couldn't even find anybody to just take Angelina Jolie off my hands. So I still have her in my collection. She just hangs out in my closet of collectibles, like behind the shelf.
You have quite the cardboard stand-up collection. That's one of the things I always appreciate around Halloween when those come out.
Well, especially when I hand some off to you. I gave you the Crypt Keeper cardboard stand-up after I got the Spencer's life-size version from the 90s.
Which comes out every Halloween. It is a favorite decoration of mine as well.
I love being a turtle!
So you're a fan of this movie. Why are you a fan of this movie? Was it just that you were a kid and it was just you saw a cartoon and just put two and two together and said... Or what? You put one and one together and said, yeah, this is what I want, this is what I like?
So, of course, like you, I was a big fan of the cartoon, had the toys, so many toys, still have a lot of toys behind us. But it was just, I hadn't seen anything quite like that. I'd seen Batman 1989, but it was just the action and seeing the guys in the suit. And even to this day, I still have that willing suspension of disbelief where when I watch this movie, they aren't guys in suits, they're turtles. This is a movie that we've both kind of talked about in passing, but really haven't had any major conversations about. I'm curious, now that you appreciate it, what are some of the scenes you really
like?
Did
I say I appreciate it?
I thought you said you appreciated it.
I never said that. You just said, let's talk about turtles. I'm like, sure, I can talk about turtles.
All right, maybe.
You just learned a few minutes ago that I'm not even a fan of the movie.
Yeah, okay.
I can talk about the movie. I watched the movie. I reminded myself of the movie this morning. I gave it a good watch. So
okay. Well, now that you've watched it again, I guess I had it wrong. I guess we had talked about the second movie and just thought that you liked the first one too. But all right. Well, what did you like about the movie? Let's go top three scenes. We'll go through them.
Now you told me to at least have some favorite moments. I did have some favorite moments from the movie. Story was not one of them. I thought the story was pretty bad. No character development whatsoever. There's nobody... Well, I take that back. One of the most random characters in the movie that had any dynamic development whatsoever from beginning to end was the character Danny. Remember Danny? He was the
yes.
April's boss's kid who was getting in trouble with the Foot Clan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had this whole story arc where he went from being one of the foot soldiers to turning a new leaf by the end and realizing he needed to be a better kid and better son. And so he was the only person... who had no relation to anything he'd ever seen in the comics, the cartoons, the toys, who had any, like I said, real story arc throughout the whole thing. But everybody else was pretty one note. It was just scene to scene of, for me at least, the fight scenes that weren't that memorable. And I'm not dissing on the movie. It was an important benchmark in independent filmmaking. And it did well at the box office. And, you know, pop, as far as pop culture is concerned, I mean, it's like... the Disney World that every other franchise or IP, you know, strives to be, including me with Screaming Soup. I mean, if I you know, I've looked at the blueprints of the Kevin Eastman, Peter Laird success story, and it's like, well, how can I apply that to me with my ideas and cartoon show, and how can I make that as big as what they did? But but it was a well-made movie. I mean, the special effects were top shelf. The acting was perfectly fine, and it's just for me, I was already spoiled by, let's say, the cartoon show. I saw the cartoon, I saw mutants, I saw robots, I saw interdimensional aliens. So when I went into this movie and didn't see any of that, minus, you know, the Turtles, Shredder, and Splinter, for me, that just wasn't enough. That's why I liked the second one more, because the second one had all the mutant fights. Right. It's like, okay, this is what I wanted. I wanted kind of a Bebop Rocksteady battle with the Turtles. That's like Godzilla or something. It's like, you want to see monsters fighting monsters. When you don't see monsters fighting monsters, then it's just kind of like, then I lose interest pretty quick.
So it is interesting you mentioned Danny and his character arc, because in the novel, he's...
Now, is this a young adult novel or the adult novel?
This is the official novelization by B.B. Hiller.
Photo. So that's the young adult novel. You need is pictures. There...
Wow, is there more than one? Because this is the only way I could still find.
Oh, that's all you can find? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, maybe there is another. I know there's a graphic novelization as well, which I want to read and see if it's any different now. But Danny Thomas, whatever his name is.
Danny Tanner from Full House?
No, well, yeah, I was trying to think of the kid's last name. But anyway, he has a much greater role in the book. Not really, but you kind of see things from his perspective more. Where he, you know, is around when the Turtles are escaping from the burning, not farmhouse.
Antique
store, yeah. And starts having this realization that maybe he's made a mistake. And you see, like, when Shredder's addressing the crowd, him having a moment and being like, oh, yeah, I just saw some turtles, and, you know, compelling him to stand up, which you might not. You didn't necessarily need in the movie to understand what was going on, but I just thought it fleshed him out a little better and made me appreciate him as a character more. Because, like you said, when I was a kid, I was like, who is this kid? I don't care about this kid. Show me turtles fighting.
But now as an adult, you want to see the Danny sequel? You want to see catch up with Danny, see where he's at now in life?
It would be interesting. Maybe he's got a dead-end news director job like his dad now. Or maybe, you know, there was a deleted scene where he and April were pitching the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic book that actually is the final scene in this novel as well. So maybe he went on to become a successful comic book writer. I don't know. Hmm.
So anyway, so you asked me for my favorite scenes.
Yes.
Okay, so the one thing I did pull out of this movie that I thought was very interesting and very funny was, so it's not any huge thing that, especially in the 80s, I mean, kids watch R-rated movies all the time. I was allowed to watch a bunch of R-rated movies like RoboCop and Commando and that kind of stuff, Total Recall.
Terminator.
And see that kind of stuff. So it wasn't crazy wild for me to be exposed to cursing, but it's a little different when you start seeing it in your cartoons. So in Turtles, you know your audience is going to be packed with children, and they're all going to be into the Turtles and enjoying everything they're doing on screen and definitely tuned in to everything they're doing and saying. So I found it so funny that throughout this movie, the Turtles are cursing up a storm, and it even starts with the first line. Raphael loses his sigh in the street when saving April. And his first line, looking through the manhole, is, oh, man, damn.
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 Come back here. I'm not finished with you. Damn.
Damn.
The best line for me that had to do with cursing is when the Turtles were in April's apartment and they're watching the Tortoise and the Hare cartoon. And Michelangelo is talking, like, he's enthusiastically just all up on the TV yelling at the Tortoise to catch up to the Hare. He's like, ninja kick the damn rabbit.
Don't just ninja kick the damn rabbit. Do something.
You're right. That was shocking for me as a kid, too. That's another thing that's different in the novel. They're watching the Flintstones, and they're not really into it at all. And, like, I think Michelangelo's line there is, like, that Dino sure can't act. Or something.
Oh, he doesn't tell Fred to ninja kick the damn dino?
No, but that would have been a much better line in the book. Another dissimilarity between what's on the page and what's on the screen is, instead of Raphael going to see Critters, he goes to see E.T.
Yeah, I think he made the better choice in the movie. Critters is better than E.T. for sure.
Now, I've heard somewhere along the line that they also considered having him go see Batman, since that was the big, huge comic book movie that...
It's definitely what influenced the tone of this movie, for sure. There's no doubt it influenced the feel and look of this one.
Speaking of the feel and look, I love the dark color scheme, the darkness that everything is in, and just the way they presented... The lair is this dark place, and one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when they introduce the Shredder. Now, I have a whole new appreciation for it as a filmmaker just because of there's this one awesome tracking dolly shot or dolly jib shot where.
And what is that?
So, I'll walk through the scene with you.
Okay.
So, the Shredder is walking into it's actually an abandoned cement factory where they film the big rally where he addresses the crowd in North Carolina, just up the road from us. And they filmed a lot of scenes from The Crow and I think Super Mario Brothers, some stuff from there in that cement factory. So it has
a big... Yeah, all of Dino Hatton was filmed there.
Yep. So that has a big movie history. And the scene or the shot is you see the shadow begin to emerge, and this huge shadow, the camera's... Bird's eye view, looking straight down, and then you see just a little bit of the Shredder. The Shredder. He's a tiny figure, the back of the frame, and then the camera swoops down and moves forward, and it lands at a low angle, looking up at him, and you just kind of see all this metal to the side, and then he turns his face, and you get to see that first little bit of him. But it doesn't stop there. It swoops behind him again very slowly, and it forces you to just kind of stare at all that sharp metal on his head before it lands on the other side of his face, and you get to see him turn, and you get to see the full spectacle of all these kids watching him too. So many extras there packed out.
Were you afraid for that kid that he was putting the Foot Clan mask on? Because he had that one huge Shredder claw in the left hand, and I couldn't stop thinking, but like, man, maybe you should take that off before he puts this guy's mask on. I'm thinking he's going to, like, give him a big old haircut there as he pulls the mask down.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because when I was rewatching it, too, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, the Shredder must be really friggin' confident in his abilities. You know, because I wouldn't want to be in a fight with all that stuff on. I mean, if I was wearing that, I would just be walking through the door and then bump my shoulder because I'm a clumsy... pardon my language, and slam right into the door frame and have my Shredder spikes, whatever you want to call them, stuck there. And then that'd be the end of my story.
That's probably how he keeps getting his cape all over his shoulder blades, because I was thinking about that too. His sidekick, Kinto?
Tatsu.
I was noticing, I was laughing just thinking how Tatsu probably has to take his cape off his shoulder blades all the time. That wasn't a one-time instance for dramatic effect. That's probably like... Oh, again? Like, Tatsu!
De-shred me!
Together we will punish these creatures.
One of the other scenes that really made me laugh had to do with a foot soldier. I love the scene where the Foot Clan has cornered April in the subway, and the one foot soldier walks up to her and says... Like, we have a message for you, and he puts his hand up in front of his face, closed, like he's holding something, and then he opens it to reveal nothing, then slaps her across the face and says to shut it.
Your mouth, shut it, I thought it was, or something like that.
Your mouth may yet bring you much trouble, Miss O'Neill. I deliver a message. Shut it.
But it was just funny, just that whole moment of just,
yeah.
You know, I have a message. Shut it! Like, it just is so reminded. It just took me right back to, like, the Chappelle Show when he's doing the Rick James sketches. Yep. Of, what are the five fingers? Say the face! Slap! It was just such a moment like that. It's like, I just had to laugh out loud at that. So that automatically was, like, one of my favorite scenes.
I believe that foot soldier was also the actor who played Donatello in the suit.
That was Ernie Reyes?
Was that Ernie Reyes who was Donatello? Who was the... Maybe it was Leonardo. It was one of the turtles. who's the performer in the suit, got to play that foot soldier. But okay. I don't think it was Ernie Reyes because it doesn't sound like him unless it was
dubbed or something dubbed. After. Yeah, I don't know. Because, Ernie Reyes was playing Donatello.
Okay. Maybe it was, like I said, it just happened to spring to my memory when you were talking about it. It was like, oh, yeah, that was one of the scenes that was one of the guys in the suits. They're kind of scattered throughout. Like, I believe the guy in the cab when Raph is leaving the movie theater.
Looked like sort of a big title. In a trench coat.
Was the guy who was playing Raph in the suit?
Oh, he was. Mm-hmm. Okay, see, I didn't know that.
And then the guy who delivers the pizza, the Domino's delivery guy, was Michelangelo's.
No way, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So
he's the guy in the suit. All these are the guys who were in the
guys who were in the suit, okay. Who found themselves in other suits in the movie.
Yeah. Now, do you like Splinter being a rat the whole time, or do you like a man who mutated into a rat story?
It feels more natural that he was always a rat.
See, I actually prefer him used to be human. I like how he had more of a relationship with Shredder that way. Because I just find it too weird for Shredder to have a grudge against an old enemy's pet rat that he never knew was a threat until it became a threat when it was mutant.
I don't necessarily think that he has a grudge against the rat. I think he had a grudge against the rat taught the turtles how to fight like, what was his name? Hamato Yoshi?
Yeah.
And it just reminded him of that whole rivalry and what drove him to murder and struck some kind of chord. I mean, he had to eliminate that because it was a threat. I don't know. In the book, too, it's a little different because Orokusaki, the Shredder in the movie, was the protege of some other guy who Hamato Yoshi actually has the love interest with and has like a duel with and kills. And then Orokusaki comes to America to avenge his master's death. And so what they actually end up with on the screen is a little more powerful, that it was actually their love triangle. And
now you keep bringing up the book. Tell me this much. In the book, does the Shredder actually have a master plan in the book? Because I realize in the movie, he never has a master plan. I'm not even sure they specifically, even though you assume, but they never specifically say, all the electronics they're stealing throughout the city, they never say that they're stealing them to fence elsewhere. For all I know, they're really just stealing it to just keep for themselves. Like they want to be the only people in all of Manhattan who have TVs and arcade machines and record players and stereos. And
it does not. Yeah, it just kind of positions it. There's really not much more in the book than there is in the movie. I don't know. It's just very weird that, what are they doing?
I mean, what was his plan? Was he trying to become like the kingpin of New York, or was he trying to take over the East Coast? Was he trying to train these, the Foot Clan up to like kill the mayor or something? They never really say.
You're ruining my love for this movie tonight, Dan.
Not only that, but think about this. So the Shredder really never has much of a master plan that they really dig into whatsoever. But the Turtles also never make it a point or a mission of theirs to go stop the Shredder. They simply, they know something's going on in the city. They know there's Foot Clan, or they know there's the rumor of a Foot Clan thanks to April's broadcast on the news.
Right.
But all they know for sure is, okay, there's crime, and we're helping to kind of save some people here and there, and April's just one of those random people they save from the Foot. But after they save her, they never go into, we know about the Foot, we're after the Foot, we're going to destroy the Foot, we know who the Foot are.
Right.
It's just simply like, oh yeah, we saved you, and we kind of like you, and want to hang out. And then the Foot just keep coming after them because Shredder sees them as a threat when he hears about the fighting style. So if the Shredder had just never gone after them, nothing might have happened. He may never even died at the end of the movie, or supposedly died at the end of the movie.
Right. Yeah, you're right. There was kind of a lack of motivation on both of their parts there, or at least what came across on the screen. I think to your point, they were just kind of some bumbling teenagers who were learning some ninjutsu. And
wrong place, wrong time.
Wrong place, wrong time. And they got a chance to, that was their first battle when they saved April from in the opening scene.
Yeah, and like I said, it was just wrong place, wrong time. Mm-hmm. And then, but then Shredder comes and kidnaps Splinter, and then they have the whole mission of, okay, well now we have a reason to hate Shredder and go after Shredder because he kidnapped Splinter. But if Shredder never done that, there may not even be a movie.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing for me is what could have been if they would have kept the energy up and we would have got more sequels with more mutants, that wasn't completely derailed by the third movie. Turtles in Time.
Which I also did not like. But that, again, yeah, I didn't either. Like it because, okay, you finally brought me mutant bad guys in the second one, and you take them away in the next one. So it's like, I just lost interest again.
Yeah, and then the suits looked weird, and the whole Japan thing in the 15th century or whatever. But what was...
See, I would have been cool with that if they were just fighting a monster back then.
Or some dragons.
Or even that, if you just had them fight some kind of Jim Henson puppet creature.
Yeah.
If it's a guy in a suit or a giant puppet, I don't care which, I would have been all aboard for that movie.
But Jim Henson was no longer a part of it in the third movie.
The company was, what? Oh, no, the company wasn't, was it?
No, because they switched to a new manufacturer of the suits and...
Okay, see, I knew that was a reason for the... I knew that was a reason why the quality went down in the third one, but I forgot it was because they completely separated from Jim Henson. Okay.
What? Judith Hoag, who played April... had no idea what Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were when she got the role, but she was also shooting another movie at the time called Cadillac Man, aside
Robin Williams,
and he actually educated her about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and showed her some comic books and stuff, and I was like, man, that is a guy who could probably really voice or portray a great turtle villain in a sequel.
Krang, I could see him play Krang.
Krang, maybe even a Baxter Stockman or a Rat King.
I could see more Baxter Stockman than Rat King, but yeah.
But yeah, voice of Krang, that would have been awesome if he was, you know, even if it's like, you know, that same style where it's just like his face sticking out of the.
Any luck finding a new place to live yet?
April O'Neil. Judith Hoag, Paige Turco. Who played
her? Paige Turco, no question.
Paige Turco, no question.
Okay. I actually got to meet Paige Turco in person just a few months ago at a convention at Retro Toy Con here in Greenville, South Carolina.
I'm on the fence. When I was a kid, I thought definitely Paige Turco, but now watching the movies back, I don't know. I like Judith.
Well, I saw the movie today, and I still picked Paige Turco, so... You keep being wishy-washy there. I'm just going to stick with Paige.
All right, fair enough. Are were you more of a, what was her name, Megan Fox? Do you think she did the better April?
Paige Turco,
yeah.
I think you remember you and me watching the Michael Bay movies and laughing at the Megan Fox.
Every time she
sleuth
was on
reporter
screen. yeah, I guess that's another reason, because you and I, every time there's a new Ninja Turtle movie, we go to the theater and see it. So I guess I just had it built up in my head that you loved this movie also. What did you think of the last one? The fully animated, spirally animation style?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem,
Mutant
I think it's called.
Mutant Mayhem.
I did enjoy that one. I think Seth Rogen and the guys, they really brought a new spin and vision to it, which I appreciated. That one was full of mutants, which I absolutely loved. I wasn't crazy about all the design, the new designs necessarily for the turtles or how they try to integrate them a little more with the humans on the surface, but... but no, I thought it was fun. Had a great time with it.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting too that, you know, the turtles are fully embracing like cell phones and have like social media accounts and stuff in the movie.
It makes sense though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how they're paying for it, but makes sense.
Right. I don't know. I guess they've stolen.
I was like, whose Wi-Fi are they hacking into to be able to access the internet for creating profiles?
Yeah. What kind of Wi-Fi makes it all the way to the sewer? But. Anyway, that was fun. Any parting thoughts on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I still have a third favorite moment, don't I?
Well, by all means, sir.
Got to keep track of these. my final favorite scene is the murder of the Shredder by Casey Jones.
Oops.
I mean, it was just flat out murder. Like the turtles Splinter knocked the Shredder off a roof into a dump truck.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Casey Jones who flat out just said, oh, whoop, and let me just throw that lever and crush him like garbage.
In the garbage truck, yes.
And what was even stranger about that is when I was watching that scene from that point to the end of the movie, I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, so we know he comes back. Anyway, in the future, we know the Shredder comes back at the city dump.
Correct.
So did nobody see Shredder fall into the dump truck? Was Casey Jones the only one who knew that happened? And that's why nobody thought anything about him turning the dump truck on, because you would think with all the witnesses there,
right,
someone would have said, Shredder's in the dump truck. You should probably go look for him. But apparently they just never bothered.
Yeah.
The cops never bothered. No one ever said, you know, there's a body in that truck or there's someone in that truck you should look for. So I just found that really weird that either they all kept quiet or nobody saw it, or Casey Jones is just so crazy that he just didn't tell anybody he did that. And because even after he does it and the cops show up, he climbs on top of the dump truck and starts waving his arms around like he just was begging to be caught.
You're exactly right. Well, I guess, too, like the witnesses, other than April and Danny, are all like teenage thugs who probably are taught not to talk to police, except for the kid who completely rats out where Shredder's...
That one. So,
I don't know. But I also feel like, you know, there's a contradiction there in the end scene that you're talking about with all the cops start showing up and Danny's dad shows up, the news report truck shows up. And Splinter in the beginning of the movie is like, always stay in the shadows or something to that effect. And there they are on the roof, just like when April and Casey Jones have their big kiss, they're just like hooting and hawing up on the roof where like nobody sees or hears these mutant turtles.
Well, I'll cut them a little slack there. I mean, they just have a huge battle. They're probably a little tired from, especially Splinter. I mean, he'd been tortured and hung up by his arms up to this point.
That's true. I guess that leads into, I always loved the end scene too, when it was, you know, they're all joking and saying their catchphrases, cowabunga, or...
hellacious!
Yeah.
That was another curse word they threw in there. What will your catchphrase be? Hellacious!
Bodacious, and all the things, and then, you know, they all look at Splinter, and he's like, I have always liked cowabunga. Of all the Ninja Turtles, who's your favorite?
Probably Leonardo.
Okay.
Mainly because he's blue. I'm a fan for blue, and I just always kind of levitate toward more of the leader characters of groups. Yours?
When I saw the movie when I was 4, I would have told you Michelangelo, but over the years, I really began to like Donatello more, just because he was the...
Corey Feldman.
Yeah. Or just in all the iterations, he was just the guy who could get it done, you know? You needed something fixed. You needed something wild.
Except in this movie.
Except in this movie, yeah.
Earlier, before we started the podcast, we were joking about the end credit song. Do you pronounce it Turtle Power, or are you supposed to say T-U-R-T-L-E Power? Because they have it spelled out as a song title, T-U-R-T-L-E Power.
That is a good question.
But in the song, and granted, I mean, I don't remember the timeline for how the cartoon, where they were in production when they started producing the song or the movie, but... In the song, if you go by the lyrics, it says Splinter's the teacher, so they are the students. Leonardo, Michelangelo, and Donatello make up the team with one other fellow, Raphael. He's the leader of the group. And you and I were just flabbergasted because, like, well, he's obviously not the leader of the group. He's the star of the movie, if you really pay attention, but he's not the leader. And
right.
You and I were just kind of like, well, if you just listen to the theme song. Now, granted, it's 1990. The internet's not around for you just to be able to get answers out of the air at a whim's notice because, you know, if they wanted to hear the song, they either had to have a copy of VHS or it had to be playing on TV or something. But, you know, it's right there in the song. It says Leonardo leads.
Yeah.
So you know he's supposed to be the leader. So I don't know what where that came from.
Well, yeah, I think the cartoon series came out in 87 and that opening sequence...
So that definitely they should have known that Leonardo was the leader. So I don't know how that... But the point being is, so you have the song right there that tells you Michelangelo is the party dude, Donatello fixes or builds machines. So, but I feel like, except for Michelangelo being the party dude, I don't really feel like they wrote to the strengths as little as there were for character traits for the other turtles.
I agree. They kind of imply that Donatello is the guy who gets all the tech working, like the lights, the phone booth phone that they have down there, but they don't ever really give him his props. Like, it'd be great to, like, the phone's not working when Michelangelo tries to order the pizza or something, and then Donatello takes a little screwdriver and does something. That would have really kind of just sold that character a little bit, but I agree with you.
I still would have made him a little bit more of a MacGyver kind of character, someone who just could take little things and make some MacGyver kind of doohickey out of it to get him out of some jam.
Yeah, that might have made the end fight a little better with the Shredder. You know, maybe he would take something and create some armor that he could go against him, since Shredder was just ravishing everybody in that fight. You're mentioning the fight scenes weren't that great. I remember reading...
Well, I mean, that's not to diss on the stunt teams or the performers. It's kind of like... like, I appreciate everything they did, and they did a fantastic job at what they did. I just thought it was very Power Ranger kind of level, like, fighting, where it's like you're doing it, you're proving, you know, they were good fights. I just didn't think anything was memorable.
Right. Part of that was due to the weight of the suits. The performers in the suits could not fully, like, do their moves. They actually had to shoot it at a lower frame rate and then speed it up. So that's probably part of the problem there. It's just, I guess, the batteries for everything and the shells were really heavy. And then all the mechanisms in the head, which, did you ever see the little documentary?
The making of the movie? Yeah, I saw that.
Years ago, but that was... fascinated me as a kid.
No, it fascinated me. Yeah, that was, I mean, yeah, again, before internet, before DVD features even, mm-hmm. around 2000, yeah, that's all you had was just those little, I don't even remember how I had a copy of that. Was that on one of the VHS, one of the movies?
Or? No, there was, well, I saw it in the video rental store.
That's right. It was his own rental.
Yes.
They had okay, so that's right. It was his own VHS rental from the video store that was like the making of the Turtles and see a 30-minute behind the scenes. And that is on YouTube because I watched that within the last year.
Yeah.
Just for fun.
Yeah, I think I revisited it on YouTube a couple of years ago as well. And then I also got sucked into, do you remember the Pizza Hut promotion with the Coming Out of Our Shells tour?
I do remember it. I didn't see the performance until like the last 10 years. But as a kid, I was well aware of it, but I did not actually go to the show or buy any of that merchandise.
Yeah. I watched a little bit of it on YouTube and just kind of fast-forwarded. I remember having the tape, the cassette tape that I think came with a Pizza Hut pizza that you could pick up for like a buck or something, you know, those promotions that they always had.
Yeah, I can't believe how... So do you remember, was Pizza Hut involved at all with the second movie? Because Domino's is all over the first one.
Right.
And I can't believe that Domino's would have let something like this go to Pizza Hut after the fact, knowing just how big it was.
I'm surprised, too, because, yeah, I guess Domino's had the placement in the movie, but when it was time to do the marketing for the film, that's when Pizza Hut stepped up, I guess, offered more money than Domino's.
For the first movie?
Yeah, because even at the header of the VHS, there's a Pizza Hut commercial. There's a Pizza Hut ad roll, and then I think there was actually coupons in the VHS box where you could take it to Pizza Hut to get you...
Well, that's weird. Well, at least Burger King held in there and didn't let anybody else take their
marketing.
Yeah, take the marketing from them.
Yeah, I think it's funny that the first time we see Danny, he's just in there eating a Whopper.
Oh, yeah, they got it turned perfectly to the camera, the Whopper sign. There's no doubt that Whopper.
Yes.
Well, drinking their North Carolina Pepsi.
Maybe if we get another Ninja Turtle movie with a Burger King tie-in, we'll get a green bun Whopper with some kind of ooze on it.
I was going to say, good luck with that. We can't even always guarantee we get the Halloween Whoppers.
Well, it's an idea. While we're talking about food, I'm gonna test your Turtles IQ from my Ninja Turtle storybook from 1990 here.
Okay, so this is something meant for... like 6 or 8 year olds, right?
Which ingredient had better not be found on a pizza ordered by a turtle?
Anchovies.
You got it. Okay, right. Never mind.
Is that it? Game over?
We'll go with one more. A doji is what? Is it a pooch, a prairie rodent, a smoked sausage, or a black jumpsuit worn by people who practice ninjutsu?
The last one?
You got it. I'll put that book.
A doji?
A doji. I guess that's what
doji?
They...
Doji?
Yeah, like
how do you spell that?
D-O-G-I. So like the suit that the Foot Clan wear.
It's a dog eye.
Yeah. Dog
eye. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Doji.
You should research this stuff before we come on there.
Right? I have this book and everything.
Only effort, discipline, loyalty earn the right to wear the dragon doji.
No, I think it's pronounced doji. I don't know. Well... We haven't fact-checked any of this, so if you've made it through this much of the show and we got something wrong, go to wherever you can comment. Please let us know about it. We'd be glad to engage with you and maybe learn a thing or two from you. Dan, I've enjoyed sitting with you tonight and having you rip apart one of my favorite movies as a kid.
My pleasure, Dale.
You love to suck the joy out of my life. I'm kidding. I always enjoy
it. Oh, I used to like it. I mean, like I said, it's a solid made movie. It's just a very weak story.
It is.
That's really all it is to it. Just a weak story, and it just didn't have what. Now, let me ask you this. Now, if there weren't the cartoon series, if there weren't the action figures, do you think you would still have as much love for this movie?
No, because it was definitely
influenced by those
the cartoon things, yeah. And then the action figures, and then I had seen like the Ninja Turtle suits that were on like the parade, you know, that were inspired by the cartoon. I guess that's what kid me was expecting, and then I was blown away by the actual suits, the actual stuff that we got, and that's what I still like about it to this
day.
Like I said,
solid movie.
Right.
There's no hating on the movie for just being what it is. It just wasn't what I wanted in a turtle movie.
Right.
And it had, a weak story with a lot of flat characters. That's really the only thing I would knock it for. But otherwise, not a bad movie.
One of these days, we'll have to dive into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 and see what our takeaways can be from that. In the meantime, though, enjoyed hanging out with you. Thank you for hitting the rewind button with us tonight as we dive back into this movie. Dan, I can't wait to talk about some more fun things with you. And any topics you're really looking forward to covering down the road?
Oh, just anything and everything. 80s, 90s, comic books, toy lines, movies, TV shows.
Halloween specials.
Pogs.
Pogs. Slammers, too. Can't have one without the other, right?
Yeah, you can't play Pogs without Slammers. That is right. That is right.
Man, I forgot about Pogs. Remember Alf?
Were there Alf Pogs? Like, well, how did you jump from Pogs to Alf?
There were in an episode of The Simpsons, because Milhouse approaches Bart in some scenes like, remember Alf?
Alf Pogs. Remember Alf? He's back in Pog form.
I remember that episode. I do remember that episode.
Another detour. We go on a lot of those when we start talking about old things. Anyway, if you enjoyed what you saw tonight, or heard tonight, however you found us, like, subscribe, do all the things. Please drop us a comment and share. And Dan, thanks again. Enjoyed hitting the rewind button with you. Can't wait to do it again soon.